our parents, our first teachers. And although some people would like to say you pick your parents, it really doesn't make any sense to put it like that. It wouldn't really even make sense to say your parents picked you. You know, they may have intended to bring you forth, but the personality, the structure that you take, the interests, the aspirations, the things that you're drawn to do, they have no real control over, although they might try to control it. In some cases, one or both of your parents become a spiritual teacher for you at times. What it means to have a spiritual teacher rather than a teacher, the distinction is that a spiritual teacher helps you see the way things really are. They don't just provide experiences and information and opportunities. They help you actually open up, not just conceptually, but experientially, and see how things really are. They help you see reality. They might help you see it a little bit, or they might help you see it a lot. If you look at your own life, and you look back and you say, okay, what did my parents give me? You might say they gave you a sort of a bundle of conditions. They gave you a bundle of conditioning. They may have taught you to the best of their ability what was right and what was wrong. And they might have tried to teach you how to be happy. And they might have tried to teach you about what not to do. They might have taught you how to pray. They might have taken you places that opened you up. They might have taken you places that frightened you, taken you places that you didn't want to go. They might have left you at home when you wanted to be taken out with them. In some cases, they might have locked you out of the house when you wanted to come in. They might not have tolerated your emotions, and at other times, they did. They might have told you that certain emotions were not okay at all. They might have exhibited selfishness, arrogance, anger, fear, sadness, equanimity, compassion. Lots of possibilities. But regardless of how it went for you, they were your first teachers. They're the ones that contributed to you getting this package, this vehicle. And this is many things, the body, but one thing it is for sure, it's a vehicle for awakening. And if you were lucky, fortunate, as I count myself to be, one or more of your parents acted at times like a spiritual teacher, or at least a spiritual friend. A spiritual teacher is always a spiritual friend. But a spiritual friend is not always a spiritual teacher. If you're fortunate, you might recognize you have 3, 4, or possibly 5 spiritual friends in the course of your life. These are the most important people in your life. So I had an amazing good fortune happen to me last week. On the 18th of this month, I had a trip planned to visit my parents up in Massachusetts. My father was 94, my mother 92, still living independently with round-the-clock assistance to maintain my dad's needs, his dementia, and his physical immobility. About 5 days prior to my scheduled flight, both my mom and dad got the flu, and on top of that, my dad got pneumonia. A few more days passed, the pneumonia was very deep. It was an aspirated pneumonia, which means the body, in a way, can't figure out how to distinguish where the food should go and where the air should go. So you can imagine at 94 with aspirated pneumonia, it's kind of serious. So he went into the hospital, and I got there 5 days after he had been admitted. His face was as white as that carpet. But he brightened up pretty quickly. As is often the case when people come to see you and you're really down and out, they brighten you up. The first doctor that appeared had a bad cough himself, and I wondered why he wasn't at home. We all had to wear masks, rubber gloves, and some people were coming in with rubber suits. My brother said, "We're going into the belly of the beast." I said, "Maybe." The first doctor had a bad cough, and I wondered why he wasn't at home. The nurse rounded that one out. She said, "You know, in the old days, in the old school, when you got sick, you stayed home and you had chicken soup. Nowadays, people fly around on airplanes, buses, talk on their cell phones, and spread pneumonia." I found that amusing. You know how it is if you've been in the hospital. People are doing things to you all day and night long, if you're sick enough. So both arms are just covered with places where different kinds of things have been done on my dad's body. So I became pretty clear pretty quick that the opportunity was to get him out of there as quickly as possible and get him home. Do you know that human beings can act in angelic ways? The first angelic human being appeared in the form of an Egyptian doctor. Saturday morning, the day after I got there, this glowing, wide-eyed, very present, loving human being appeared. And we started talking about, okay, so what's going on? What can we do? You know what it's like to feel like somebody gets you without even having to talk to them? When somebody's inside your experience with you without having to say a word, that's how he felt to me. What it feels like when someone is going to watch out for you, really take care of you. But really what he was doing was he was taking care of my father through me. Everything just lined up very fast. Hospice was called in. I talked with the hospice nurse, got my mother there. We sorted that, got that all together. By the next morning, got the ambulance in place, brought him home. Aspirated pneumonia, or any kind of pneumonia, especially in a 94-year-old, sounds like every cough, to me at least, is the end. The house my folks live in have a hall from the main living area back into my dad's bedroom, and I swear, my friends, the hall's about that wide. It's ridiculous. It's so narrow. There's no way these guys were going to get that stretcher back through there. You know how they took him back? Basically, in a sheet. And they carried him back and put him in his bed. And I knew at that moment that the vigil had begun. That he was not going to be eating again and he was not going to be drinking again. How long does it take to dehydrate? If you Google that, it says 3 to 7 days. But there are people who stop drinking and they live for 3 weeks. And there's people who stop drinking and eating and they live for 1 day. The unknown is sitting amidst what we call the known all the time. I have a crazy family, meaning that my siblings don't get along very well. And they're all coming for this. By the second morning, the dementia kicked in. My father went paranoid. It wasn't that bad. He believed that I was going to kill him. The way hospice does it, you may know, is they're all about comfort. How to provide comfort until the last breath. In my dad's case, it was morphine and lorazepam. Morphine for physical pain, lorazepam for anxiety. It's a common pair. He can't open his mouth or won't open his mouth, so he can't put the medication in. That was interesting. The way the mind works when it's paranoid, when it believes it's paranoia. We got through it. The hospice folks would roll in, and some were more gentle than others. Some seemed bereaved. One in particular, I asked her, "How are you?" She said, "My mother died yesterday." She said, "It was horrific." I said, "I'm sorry." There's a team of people, they're all over the planet, that are part of this hospice world. She said, "In 3 days I'm going into bereavement process group." I could see that she was in so much pain. I wanted to protect my father, so I arranged to not have her come back. Was I fearful? Was I kind? Was I reactive? Was I confused? What is right action when a loved one is dying in front of you? Time began to slip away. I couldn't tell what day it was very easily. The brain started to feel like mush. Medications needed to be given every 3 hours. My dear middle sister had been hospitalized in a psych unit 2 weeks before this happened at my folks' house. She tried to take over medicating my father. My brother stopped her, and then I had to help keep them from flying off the train tracks in their relationship, almost by kind of just keeping them apart. My older sister hadn't arrived yet. You'll like the arrival of her, I think. So it's getting to be now Wednesday. We're 3 days into the visual. I forget to call Ibby and say I won't be at meditation. I'm starting to forget other things, too. I'm starting to wonder what matters. I'm watching my father like a hawk. I'm meditating with him. Wednesday night, my brother and I are sitting with him. It's the last time he spoke. We're saying, "Dad, how you doing in there?" I can't even imitate it. It's the sweetest sound I ever heard. He just hums back his answer. It's interesting to watch a body dehydrate. It's interesting to see the skin change almost literally before your eyes. It's interesting to watch the hair apparently turn whiter. Or am I hallucinating? Thursday, Friday, Saturday appears. These hospice folks have a hard position when people say, "How much longer does my loved one have?" One guy said a week. One nurse said he could go any moment. I like that he could go any moment because that's true for all of us, isn't it? It's a hard spot, I imagine, to be in, to have to answer that question. To say something or to say nothing. Saturday morning came, and my father had been sitting rather sort of reclined, because with pneumonia you can't really lie down, you have to basically sit up, because the breathing doesn't work if you're not somewhat vertical. So the whole thing in those last days became getting him aligned so that he could breathe. And this, it just got more and more subtle. Because as the cough and the phlegm started to dissolve in the body, the breath started to rise in the chest, get shorter and more faint. It was all about just keeping him comfortable and aligned. So for the last 24 hours of his life, he sat like a Buddha. He didn't move. All that was moving was the breath. The second, in my mind, angel appeared. This time it was the last nurse. About 11 o'clock Saturday morning, she appeared. She checked him out. I said, "You're going to check his blood pressure?" She said, "When it's this far along, I don't bother." So I said, "Do you think we should change his diaper one more time?" My projection of one more time, right? She says, "Sure." You ever watch a really skilled person change a diaper? It's amazing. To change a diaper on a human being, and have them not be disturbed at all. Maybe he was past that point. But we changed his diaper together, and at one point she took him in her arms. I wish I had a picture of that. One of the most beautiful things I ever saw was her holding my dad in her arms. It just happened that as we were turning him to get the diaper and the pad in place, she ended up in his arms. And then she rolled him back and she said, "Mr. Lin, you can go at any time." The room was becoming, to me, very light, and the snowflakes were shimmering with the sunlight on them. My brother went crazy one more time when he had to figure out, when we came out into the dining hall, or dining room, exactly what was happening with Dad's body and what were the arrangements, and it was all in place, but he had abstained from the meeting that happened a few hours ago where everything was clarified and the paperwork was out. My dad donated his body to Tufts Medical School for anatomical research. I realized that what we were having was the funeral, the wake. All at once. I realized that his fourth wish was getting closer to being granted, and that was this. The first being, please help me never be in a nursing home. Do not artificially sustain my life. Help me die at home and help me die in peace. The first three were in place, the fourth was yet to come. It got so wild, my brother was in the kitchen sorting things out, and suddenly a pan went flying in the air. I don't know how it happened. Big giant clang, and he's laughing. The nurse was impeccable. You ever see a human being under stress completely and utterly not flinch? That was her. Just taking care, sorting it through, getting my brother in the loop. Here's how it works. Making a few phone calls, getting the person at Tufts Medical on the phone. It's 1 o'clock. My brother and my brother-in-law go in, sit with my dad. I go upstairs and I'm helping my sister. Who can barely stay in the house. Her body is shaking from fear. And she's completely and utterly overwhelmed. We're doing a little therapy and it's actually going kind of nicely. She's relaxing. She makes a decision to stay until he passes. She was wondering whether she should be there 5 minutes after arriving. She and I are upstairs. I hear a knock on the door. It's her husband. He says, "You might want to come downstairs now. Your brother," said Ed, that's my dad's name, "is fading." We're in the middle of a very intense therapeutic moment. Feels strange to leave. I say, "Donna, let's go." Move as fast as I can. As I get down, just outside the room where my dad is, my brother comes out and he's bursted open with tears. I look and I see translucent face of my dad. He just passed. It's Same posture he'd been in for 24 hours, only now. It was so subtle, the last breath, that my brother-in-law didn't see it. Whereas my brother said he just passed. They went up together and checked the heart, and sure enough, it had stopped. Sometimes the breath stops first, sometimes the heart stops first, sometimes they stop together. It's amazingly mysterious. Mystery's all over the room for me. Everybody pours in. Everybody has their experience. I failed to mention my sister, the older one, who arrived 2 days before he passed and said to me, "How come it's so quiet around here? Feels controlled." And I said, "Is there a difference for you between peaceful and controlled?" No response. When she went in to connect with my dad, she came in like this. "I don't care what they're doing. Remember me, Dad? How you doing in there?" She's looking at me. It's so strange to me. "You've been helping him get peaceful for 5 days, and you showed up late, and you're rousting him up." I wanted to stop her. I decided to just step out of the room. Fear, protection, confusion, desire, controlling. I immediately called my wife on the phone. I said, "You want to know what just happened?" She said, "Yeah, sure, tell me." I told her, and she said, "Paul, don't you understand? If your father had been able to, he would have gotten up and danced with her. Don't you understand? He's so far beyond." I knew she was right. No control. One of the teachings coming through. Absolutely no control, and it's totally safe. And if that's not clear, then there's still fear. If that's not clear, then there's confusion. If that's not clear, then there's grasping. So he passes. And then the guys from the funeral home come. Have you ever been with guys from a funeral home? Have you ever been with somebody who does that for a living? They're really interesting dudes. They're usually dudes, and they're very stiff. Their words are very exacting. "I'm so sorry for your loss. Do you need any more time with his body?" They're very polished and professional. Everything's in place. It's funny watching your dad go out in a bag. Is that my dad? A body in a bag? Is that where you'll be? I have a friend in Hawaii. He says, "I wonder how I'll die and who will be with me." Before we got my dad out of the hospital, he said, "It's not time to die yet. You know why? Because I have more people to help. There's more people to help." And we were the last ones he helped. My brother had a dream the night after he died, and the dream was this. It went like this. A message came, and the message was, "I can't help you in the body anymore, so I'm going to help you in the spirit." A lot of people tell you We're sorry for your loss when you lose a loved one. I understand it, but it doesn't somehow really work very well because I don't feel any sorry. I feel a gigantic celebration. I feel a gigantic freedom. You ever smell a person's body when they're dying? Sometimes it starts to smell like a newborn baby. You know that smell that comes out of a newborn baby's head? That's the way my dad started to smell as the days went on. It got stronger and stronger. I wonder how these bodies in this room will die. That's what dies. Couldn't see anything in that room except it became very light to me. Couldn't see any spirit. But it was so clear that there was something there and then there was not something there. I said to the social worker who was trying to take care of my sister who had tried to kill herself 2 weeks before this happened, "May we all be so lucky as Ed." She said, "Yeah, he was really in the groove." He died sitting up. Some meditators die sitting up with no back support. My dad had back support. So for me at least, the teachings from this just are going on and on and on. The body hasn't slept too much. Been a lot of meditation. I called my son after it happened. I've been communicating with the family, sending them pictures of the events of the week. My son said, "Here's one for you, Dad. It's from Mark Twain. Mark Twain said, 'I do not fear death. I've been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born. And not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it.'" I said, "That's great, Gabriel. You like that?" He said, "I like that." My dad was my first spiritual teacher. In so many ways. This is a teaching he gave me when I was very young. This is inscripted on a wall at Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts. Very simple. It says, "To larger sight, the rim of shadow is the line of light." The rim of shadow is the passage through death. It's a passage. It appears to be a shadow in light. The larger sight. That's the illuminated insight. That the rim of the shadow is the line of light. Anyways, thank you for letting me share with you. How are you tonight?
How's your mom?
She's amazing. She was meditating with him and doing pranayama. She was sitting there next to him going, she was massaging his third eye. She does yoga on him. I pushed it a little too far. The morning he died, I put a teddy bear next to him and I took some pictures of it, and then I invited people to come in and I made up a story that the teddy bear had moved in the night somehow next to him. It didn't work for somebody because the teddy bear was removed and put back on the desk. Certain things work for certain people and not for others. She walks like a crab, Rich. She has one of those carts that you walk with, and she puts things on the little seat, and she walks like this. Sometimes the back comes up a little bit. She's got a, like, the biggest C-curve scoliosis that I've ever felt. It just goes like that. She wakes up in the morning, and the first thing she does is she starts moving her knees. She's got arthritis, and then she starts doing rotations on her back. This is what she does when she wakes up. And then she does her hand stretches on the side of the bed. I mentioned she got the flu. She took a flu shot. She took no antibiotics. She used salt and homeopathy and vitamins and knocked the flu out. The morning after he passed, she said, "I miss Eddie." So she seems great.
How long have they been married?
70 years.